KALW. From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
The Mission. Excelsior.
Redwood City.
American Canyon.
San Francisco.
Vallejo.
Coming up, we're diving in, literally, to the issue of water quality in swimming spots in the Bay.
It's brown and murky, but honestly, the bacteria is not what I'm thinking about right now. I'm thinking about the temperature.
Then we'll hear how one dance form encourages physical closeness in unfamiliar ways.
And have a dance with a complete stranger and never even know their name. That might be very intimate in some ways.
And we'll hear the sounds of San Francisco's streets through the ears of one of its musicians.
I'm out here playing on the streets. I'm a street musician.
Keep listening. Cross Currents is next. It's summer, and Bay Area residents will be heading to the beach, the bay, and lakes. But before you go, make sure you check the weather and the water quality. Cities and the regional park system test natural bodies of water for fun things like E. coli and cyanobacteria to make sure they're safe for us to swim in. Many favorite swim spots often get designated as, quote, enter at your own risk. So what does that actually mean? KALW's health reporter Marissa Ortega Welch dove in, literally, to find out the answer.
I'm really nervous.
Getting into the bay at Aquatic Park with no wetsuit on a cold, foggy morning in San Francisco, the water quality was not my top concern.
It's brown and murky, but honestly, the bacteria is not what I'm thinking about right now. I'm thinking about the temperature.
I'm here with Nancy Iverson, a longtime open water swimmer.
Okay, let's do it.
Iverson is a member of the South End Rowing Club, one of the famous swim communities out at the end of Fisherman's Wharf.
It's not that bad.
Iverson loves introducing people to swimming in the bay. She even has an organization that trains people to swim to Alcatraz.
I mean, it is one of the first questions, especially for new swimmers, like, oh, what's the water quality like?
A friend first took her swimming at Aquatic Park 24 years ago.
I was a pediatrician at the time that I first started, and I went back to my office and sort of stood and looked at the antibiotic shelf and thought, I want to take everything that's in here just because I'm so afraid. I want to kill every bug that I might have encountered. And then I just started thinking that's really stupid.
In the open bay, there are dangers to watch out for. Large boats, strong currents, and in the winter, there are other health risks.
There can be, and especially this winter with all the flooding and stuff, there certainly was the possibility for overflow of sewage systems, for runoff of bacteria.
Bay Area beaches have some of the cleanest water in California. The San Francisco Public Utilities Commission monitors the water quality of the bay and ocean weekly. That's helpful to swimmers like Iverson and surfers like John Brandon of Pacifica. He created a Twitter account that automatically tweets out the city's water quality data.
Okay, well, this whole Twitter account was kind of an outlet for my childish humor. So if you look at the Twitter account, you have the emoji for a pile of poo. And the Twitter handle is @beachpoobot, one word. And the name is Beach Poo.
You can follow Beach Poo on Twitter and get updates on E. coli levels and sewer overflows.
So it's just an automated way to do what you can already do through your web browser, but it adds a little bit of convenience to it.
Can we pull it up?
Looks like the latest sample that was posted on the web was 5 days ago, and so that was the one at Lincoln.
Ocean Beach, near Lincoln Way. It's one of the places where the city tests the water quality. The city also posts when there's been a sewer overflow. This is a problem somewhat unique to San Francisco. The city treats both the sewage from houses and the water from storm drains before releasing it. When it rains a lot, the treatment facilities can't keep up. They have to discharge some of the sewage before it's fully treated.
So if you go back to April 9th, you'll see that there was a sewer overflow at Islayus Creek.
I see two red exclamation marks, a skull emoji, and then two more red exclamation marks, and it says Islayus Creek sewer overflow. Oh, so and here on April 7th, I see at Sloat there was a sewer overflow right here. So would you, and there's four retweets. Somebody cared. Four people cared.
People care about the sewer overflows. Yeah, that's and for good reason too. I mean, that's one of the things that I really care about too. And one of the things that I personally am looking for, especially during the winter.
Right down the beach from us is one of those concrete buildings that seem to randomly pop up along Ocean Beach. You know the ones that are usually covered in graffiti? Those are the overflow sites. In a big winter storm, sewage is sometimes discharged right there. That could have an impact on a surfer like Brandon.
And so if you were heading out to surf that day and saw this sewer overflow warning at Sloat, what would you do?
I would look for somewhere else to surf.
Now, if you want to go for a dip over in the East Bay, you'll probably end up at one of the East Bay Regional Park District's lakes. Hal McLean is the water management supervisor for the district.
Well, I'm going to wade out about 12 to 18 inches, and then I'm going to use my sweeping motion to collect a water sample.
McLean is testing the water quality at Lake Temescal in Oakland. This is a popular swim spot for families and kids' camps in the summer.
Did you see the fingerling bass scatter as I walked out in the water?
McLean throws the sample into a cooler with samples from the other swim areas in the park system. Later, he'll take them to a lab to test for E. coli and other pathogens. Each week, East Bay Parks grade swim areas on a traffic light system. Green means the beach is open, red means the beach is closed, yellow means the beach had a high bacteria count in the last 30 days. Where does all this bacteria come from?
We all have bacteria on us, and when we go swimming, we transfer that bacteria to the water.
But it's not just us human swimmers. Other animals bring bacteria into the lake, too.
We've got fish, we've got birds, and some times of the year we have otters out here. So that's pretty exciting.
McLean's protocol is to test in the shallow waters, where young kids are most likely to be. Not because they're the ones most likely to add bacteria into the water, but because they're the ones most vulnerable to getting sick. If you swim further out in the lake, there's likely to be less bacteria.
Yes, in the deeper water, you do get a lot more mixing. Pretty much dilution is the solution to pollution.
I kind of knew he was going to say that. You spend enough time around water, and you're probably going to hear that phrase. There's one other thing McLean is on the hunt for.
I really don't see any cyanobacteria.
That's the scientific term for blue-green algae.
There might be something over here. Let me take a sample.
The algae is natural, but can have toxins that are harmful if ingested. No one in the U.S. has died from it, but some dogs have, because they're more likely to drink water from the lakes.
If you're not swallowing the water, then you're going to be all right.
The park district errs on the side of caution and closes Lake Temescal during big algae blooms, like they did this week. The lakes can also cause swimmer's itch from a parasite found in duck feces. It won't hurt you, but it can cause your skin to crawl. All you need to do to avoid it is shower and towel off. But it's not the most pleasant thing to think about.
You don't test these lakes and think, God, I would never swim there?
A couple people that work for the district won't swim in some of the lakes. You know, a lot of the people that work see how people are and see what people do and just aren't excited about the situations around their lakes.
McLean doesn't want to go into too much detail. But let's be real, it's not uncommon to see a dirty diaper at the beach. That could make you think twice before going in. It brings up a good point. If we want clean water where we swim, it's largely up to us as people who recreate there.
But you swim. You swim in these. What your job doesn't keep you from wanting to swim here?
No.
McLean says to have your fun in the sun, just check the water quality before you go and don't swim in closed beaches. It's true. Dilution really is the solution to pollution. For Cross Currents, I'm Marissa Ortega Welch.
If you have a health-related story you want to hear reported, email Marissa at health@klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. If you don't know much about dance, seeing contact improvisation might be a little puzzling. People tumbling and moving, seemingly at random, without music, while touching each other at almost all times. It's a dance form that's been around for over 30 years and is beloved by all kinds of people, even those who don't participate in other kinds of dance. Kathy Carricker and Rajendra Serber are helping to organize this year's West Coast Contact Improvisation Jam, where everyone from experienced dancers to beginners to families can come and dance together for over 5 days. KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs sat down with the two of them to talk about what's so special about contact improvisation and what people can expect at the jam.
So I wanted to start by asking you a little bit more about contact improvisation. It's maybe not as well known of a dance form as other dances. So can you give a brief description, maybe starting with you, Rajendra, of what it is and how long it's been around?
Contact improv has been around since 1972. It's easy for me to remember because that was the year I was born. And most people, when they talk about the history of contact, they talk about Steve Paxton, and there were a group of people that he worked with doing some experiments, originally as performance, and then working with some college students and other people as a dance form, and it took off from there.
Yeah, he was working with a group of athletes and dancers at Oberlin College, I believe, in 1972. And Steve had been studying Aikido, which is a martial art, and he was interested in what happens in the process of falling. And that research into falling evolved into what we now call contact improvisation.
Yeah, and I think if you go to a jam now, it's developed a lot, and people aren't hurling themselves on the floor quite as much.
Wrestling mats are now.
Yeah, there usually aren't wrestling mats now.
And what does contact improvisation do for you that other dance forms might not?
Wow. Well, for one thing, it's a very sensual dance form, and you're practicing opening all of the sense perceptions, especially the sense of touch and proprioception, which is how we feel where we are in our bodies through the joints and other tissues. Turning into the sense of gravity and physics principles like momentum and gravity and inertia. It stimulates a lot of reflexes.
Yeah. I think as someone who is not so familiar with the dance, it seems to me like there are many dances out there that have sensual movements and contact with other people, but there isn't as much room for silliness or working with unintended movement or mistakes or something, and that could be a thing that would be intimate in maybe a different way than other kinds of other dances with partners.
Yeah, I think it's important to make a distinction about sensuality. I think Kathy, if I'm not mistaken, means that in a literal way, that you're using your senses. It's not it's like not something, a superficial idea of what is sensual, like as I think most people might think of sexual when we say sensual. But
yeah, not like sexy.
Not like sexy. And in a way, some forms like tango are much sexier. But you can, in contact improv, use your senses. You can follow your senses in a way, because it's very often practiced without music. So we're not driven by a rhythm. We're driven by what we are sensing, either by direct touch or momentum or gravity or...
All the little tiny shifts of weight that you can feel through the touch, through the point of contact.
Let's talk a little bit about the jam that you guys have coming up, the West Coast Contact Improvisation Jam, Wicked Jam.
That's right.
Is that right? Okay, great. So tell me a little bit more about event. It's an event you've been having under not only always this name, right? It's been nearly 30 years, and before that it was a festival and not a jam. So tell me a little bit about it, and maybe start by telling me what it means to jam in this particular context
Well, our jam is a 5.5-day event, and it's running from June 29th to July 4th. And we have classes every day. and jams, both in the morning and in the evening. And
what do you mean by jam?
So a jam is an open space where you can practice contact. And most of the time, as Rajendra said, there's no music, although we do have a few evenings where there's music, so I'm contradicting myself. But it's going to be a great festival, and the intensives are exciting. And beside the intensives, if someone doesn't want to commit to doing that, there are drop-in classes every day with a host of guest teachers that we've also invited who are coming from all over. So tons of great teachers and lots of opportunities to practice.
I'm speaking with Kathy Carricker and Rajendra Serber from WikiJam. So this year, you have a theme that's challenging assumptions. For any listeners who have heard of contact improvisation, there might be some assumptions. I know Jen, who usually hosts this, has said that people have told her that sometimes people think it's some hippie thing that can happen in certain spaces. So tell me about some of the assumptions you're hoping to challenge.
Well, gosh, I think certainly, for people that haven't practiced a lot of contact, they might be intimidated when they first see it, because if you walk into a gym or a class, there might be a lot of people flying around, and so maybe you think that you have to be really athletic or have acrobatic experience or be what we generally think of as able-bodied. And that in and of itself is not true. Another assumption that people might have is that contact is only practiced by white people. It's not true, but I think there is a lot of truth in that, generally, historically. And we've had many conversations over the years about why that is. And for the last several years at WikiJam, we've been trying to create an environment and facilitate discussions on this subject, and even we are starting to bring in people with background in diversity education.
I know that like many other art forms, there are people who come and dabble, there are people who are, you know, somewhat committed, and then there are people who are really committed and will who are obsessed and will travel all over the world for it. And I was wondering if you could reflect, maybe starting with you, Kathy, about what do you think it is that really hooks people into this particular art form, and what is it that keeps them going in it?
Personally, I think it was originally the way in which we're touching each other and moving in physical contact with another human being, which is so unusual because culturally we don't do that outside of, you touch your parents, you touch your family members, you touch your lover, maybe you get a massage once in a while, but you don't touch total strangers. You can go into a class or a jam and have a dance with a complete stranger and never even know their name. That might be very intimate in some ways, where you're rolling around together and experiencing a lot of sensitivity and exchange through touch in a way that you just don't do in your normal daily life. And when I first encountered contact improvisation as a dancer, I found that terrifying. But there was something in that fear that told me that it was something I needed to explore more.
That was Kathy Carricker and Rajendra Serber, co-organizers of the 2017 West Coast Contact Improvisation Jam. They spoke with KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs. The jam started this morning and runs through July 4th on the UC Berkeley campus. Find all the information at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hena Baba. Now we're going to bring you from the studio to the streets. We're really into sound here at KALW, in case you didn't notice. And if you wander around Bay Area cities, you know that street musicians are a dynamic part of the soundscape. Lance Gardner spent some time meeting many of San Francisco's buskers and produced a series of stories. We've got one for you to hear right now.
When I came out here, I could breathe better. Now I've been out here for 2 years now. A little over two years. So yeah, man, I love it, but it's expensive. I'm out here playing on the streets. I'm a street musician. Landed me a studio apartment here, which I've been waiting for 2 years to get. Now I'm in the heart of the city. I'm on Turk and Van Ness. So yeah, this is a blessing. Now, like I said, I know a female guitar player. She makes about $70 an hour, but she's pretty. You know, she looks like, she looks like Jennifer Lopez. Now, you know what I asked the woman? I said, if I looked like a woman, would that make me a better looking man? Well, I used to play in bands, but it was a big headache. But now I play, so I'm a independent. I'm a gun for hire because the bands, man, it's the headache. The drummer might not show for practice, and you know I can depend on myself. I get paid for practicing. What I really love about is the police though. They actually encourage you to play. I mean, where I come from, they'll lock you up real quick. Nothing like Detroit. Nothing like Detroit. But yeah, I love it, man. And like I said, the people are nice. I've taught myself in the beginning, but I ended up going to school later. When I graduated high school, I went to the University of Cincinnati. That was like in the 80s, because I started in 75. I was like 13, 14 years old. I wanted my mother to buy me a guitar, but she wouldn't get me a guitar because she thought I would just tear it up. And I borrowed a guitar from a friend down the street. A week later, I'm playing songs off the radio after just touching the guitar. They was like, okay, I guess you can do something. My auntie was like, wow, he got a gift. So that came from God. That's all I can say. I've been playing almost 40 years now. So, but I'm pretty good at it.
That piece about a San Francisco street musician was produced by Lance Gardner. Our series will continue next week, and you can hear what we've aired already at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. And that wraps up our show for today. Today's Cross Currents team includes Anjali Bhatt, Raquel Gonzalez, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Jesse Rhodes, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Cheehan. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And today we want to offer a special goodbye to two of our very special colleagues, Leela Day and Chris Hoff, who are moving on from KALW. Leela's been with us for 5 years, and Chris was one of the first members of the KALW news department. He started over a decade ago. Let's listen to a little retrospective put together by our former colleague, Seth Samuel.
In high school, they used to call me De La Soul, like De La Soul. Which makes no sense to me, but that's what they called me.
This is Nashra Chris Hoff here.
Chris and Leela, you guys have taken probably the best spontaneous photos in the newsroom of anybody.
We won a game after 28 tries.
I really miss our knowing glances across the office, Leela. And Chris, I don't know how any of this stuff works.
The stoop.
I like the pee popping with stoop.
It's the stoop.
The stoop. Stoop.
Chris and Leela, I'm always so happy whenever I get to talk with you, and I can't wait to talk with you guys again. Love you both.
I was living in Berlin, Germany, and I had this buddy who went to Estonia. This is a true story. And upon his return, he brought back this pair of hand-knitted socks from some Estonian woman.
Hello, Chris and Leela. Goodbye. Thank you for life.
Stoop.
Watch people call it the stupid.
No, they'll call us stupids like snappas. They'll be like, the stupid.
Oh, no.
Chris, I'm going to miss your grumpiness. Leela, I'm going to miss all of our talks.
Chris and Leela, I feel so, so lucky to have been able to work with both of you. I'm going to miss you both very much.
Chris and Leela, you guys are both a big part of what makes this place so special.
I have met with but one or two persons in the course of my life who understood the art of walking.
Oh, that's a good sound. You want to walk? Well, I'm going to walk through a little bit. You don't have to join me, but if you
think I want to, but you're welcome to.
Chris and Leela, it's great knowing you. I love your energy and your spirit, and I look forward to seeing you maybe around on Bodwin Street, maybe sometime in the future.
But Dwayne,
it won't be the same without you.
I don't know much, but I know I love you.
We love you.
Get out of here, but then come back and visit.
Please.
Leela and Chris, we'll miss you both so much.